Welcome to Deconstructed. I'm TJ O'Hara, the principal political analyst for IVN, the Independent Voter Network. Our goal on Deconstructed is to break down important political issues with outstanding guests so you can develop your own more informed opinion. My guest today is Tim Canova. Tim is a law professor at Nova Southeastern University in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. In 2016, he challenged Debbie Wasserman Schultz in the Democratic primary for Florida's 23rd congressional district, while she was also chair of the Democratic National Committee. In the 2018 election cycle, Tim ran for the same office in the general election as an independent. In both elections, he experienced, shall we say, some interesting results that have motivated him to become a leader in exposing and addressing election fraud. Welcome to Deconstructed, Tim.
Thank you, TJ. It's great to be back with you.
You know, in these days of purported Russian collusion, election tampering has become a greater concern. Back in 2016, I was a political consultant campaign strategist for two different federal campaigns in Florida, and your campaign attracted my attention, and I've followed you ever since. Unfortunately, the statistical and circumstantial evidence surrounding your 2016 and 2018 races cast serious doubt on the integrity of those elections. Now, there was one common thread. You had the same opponent, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She had been an incumbent since 2005. From May 4th, 2011 to July 28th, 2016, she had been DNC chair until she was unceremoniously removed for overtly favoring Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders for the party's presidential nomination. So let's take a look in chronological order. Let's start with 2016 in the Democratic primary. First, why did you decide to run as a Democrat against such a powerhouse as Debbie Wasserman Schultz, particularly at that time? And what type of progress did you make from a poll perspective against her?
Well, I had been a lifelong Democrat, except for a couple of years as an independent. I had worked on Capitol Hill years ago as a legislative aide for 2 years for the late U.S. Senator Paul Tsongas, a Democrat from Massachusetts. And I had only gone independent in 2012 out of frustration with the Democratic Party. And then I changed my registration back to Democrat with an eye towards challenging Wasserman Schultz. I'm a law professor, as you mentioned, and I've been working over the years writing about Wall Street, critical of the deregulation of big Wall Street banks. And I was critical of a lot of the trade agreements, including the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, which was proposed by the Obama administration. And that's what really got me thinking about running against Wasserman Schultz. I had tried to contact her office to lobby against the TPP, gotten brushed off, quickly learned that if you didn't have a $5,000 check to give to her campaign, you weren't going to get any kind of response even from her staff. It turned out that Wasserman Schultz was the only member of Florida's House delegation on the Democratic side to vote to fast track the TPP. And I was working with a group called the Citizens Trade Campaign, and we started looking for someone who would challenge her in a primary. You know, it's frustrating when this is a safe seat. There's no way a Republican can win this because the registration is overwhelmingly Democratic and independent. And yet, because it's such a safe seat, allow somebody like Wasserman Schultz to pretty much disregard the interests of her own constituents, go very corporate, and that's what had been happening. So as I started to research her background, I saw that she'd been taking millions of dollars from big Wall Street banks, giant fossil fuel companies, private prisons, payday lenders, a lot of bad actors. I had never really thought of seriously of running for a political office, but I got caught up in the 2016 campaign for Bernie Sanders. I had worked with Sanders' office in the past on parts of the Dodd-Frank Act, dealing with the Federal Reserve. And I was inspired by what Sanders was doing. At the time that I decided to jump in and challenge Wasserman Schultz in a Democratic primary, I thought for sure that it would gain traction fast, that the campaign would go viral, that we'd be able to raise a lot of money in small donations. And again, if I was able to beat her in a primary, you know, that would be enough. It wouldn't really be much of a contest in the general election. And that is sort of the way it started to play out from the beginning. When I jumped into the race, campaign did go viral. We started raising money very quickly in small donations. I think we raised about $1 million in the first couple of months. I jumped in January of 2016. By May, I think we had over $1 million that we had raised in small donations. And then, to top it off, out of the blue, Bernie Sanders endorsed us, endorsed me. And that gave us a big shot of adrenaline, you could say. So we ended up raising $3.8 million in small donations, 209,000 small donations with an average donation of $17. I never took a penny from any corporate interest. I swore off PAC money. And what we did with the money that we raised, we opened up 4 field offices in this one congressional district. Now, during Sanders' campaign in the primary in Florida, he had only 1 field office in all of South Florida. We had 4 field offices in one congressional district. And at the peak of the campaign, I think this was probably the largest grassroots congressional campaign in 2016. So we were knocking on 10 to 12,000 doors a week collectively. People from around the country were phone banking and calling 2 to 3,000 voters a week. And each of these voter engagements were input into the VAN voter database. When we go back and look at those final field numbers from August 2016, at the time of the primary, there were voters who had been identified as leaning towards Wasserman Schultz or strongly for Wasserman Schultz combined, were 5,112 voters. Leaning towards me, 8,000. Strongly for me, 13,000. Undecided, about 14,000. So if those numbers were any indication of what was happening on the ground, and it certainly seemed to be a good indication, Wasserman Schultz could have gotten every undecided voter and we were going to win. Well, the final official results were that Wasserman Schultz defeated me by 13 percentage points. And it never seemed right, of course, to us. And I put in a public records request to inspect the ballot. The supervisor of elections of Broward County, Brenda Snipes, who has since become more well known for other election shenanigans, her office stonewalled my public records request for something like 6 or 7 months. And I finally filed the lawsuit. While the lawsuit was pending, Snipes destroyed all the paper ballots. So federal law and state law require that those ballots be maintained for 22 months. Snipes didn't come even close to maintaining those ballots. And in our lawsuit, which was filed in Florida Circuit Court, we ended up winning. The judge granted a summary judgment since the ballots had been destroyed. And I was hoping when we were granted summary judgment, and in that ruling, the judge found that Snipes had violated several state and federal criminal law statutes, we were hoping that law enforcement would get involved and there'd be a federal investigation, a state investigation. And none of that actually happened. It was very frustrating to see that the supervisor could defy the criminal statute so openly with no repercussions whatsoever. And it really shows that Wasserman Schultz is part of this whole really organized crime network, you know, both parties covering each other's dirty laundry. And I decided to run again against her, this time in 2018, but this time as an independent. I had contacted all the the Democratic Party officials around the state, asking them to join me in calling for an investigation of the ballot destruction, and not a single one of them would even respond.
Tim, let's hold on to that for the next segment, and we'll get into 2018 more specifically. I wanted to ask you, back in 2016, you also filed a Federal Election Commission complaint relative to Wasserman Schultz receiving consulting services paid for by the DNC, and yet she received them free of charge. And the only response that I had ever seen on that was that her spokesperson came back and said that it was based on stolen and cherry-picked information because it came from WikiLeaks. However, the interesting thing, there was no denial that your accusations were inaccurate. Had there ever been any progress on that?
No, the FEC is so notoriously ineffective. And, you know, they just sat on the complaint and really did nothing. And the WikiLeaks showed that Wasserman Schultz was using the DNC to surveil my campaign, to monitor the campaign, and to attack the campaign. So they were sharing resources between Wasserman Schultz's campaign and the DNC. So clear violation of federal election law, and yet there was no repercussions for that as well.
Well, Tim, we're going to take a quick break and talk more about what you experienced as a candidate for Florida's 23rd Congressional District when we come back. Welcome back. My guest is Tim Canova, two-time challenger to Debbie Wasserman Schultz in Florida's 23rd Congressional District. Tim, we had been talking about 2016 and some of the unique experiences you had then. I think they were only exacerbated in 2018, where you participated in the general election as an independent. Now, why did you choose to run as an independent? The district itself is notoriously gerrymandered. And did you think the risk of party corruption outweighed the risk of not running as a Democrat? What was your thought process?
Well, part of it was honestly discussed with the Democrats. The party here in Broward County and in Florida had done nothing to support an honest election. I think they were very complicit in what had happened in 2016. Supervisor of Elections, Brenda Snipes, who destroyed the ballots, she was a Democrat. You would think the party would have been upset that all the ballots had been destroyed. There wasn't a single party official who would step forward and join me in calling for an investigation. So that was part of it. Part of it was discussed in the party. But also, when you looked at the numbers in the district, yes, it is heavily gerrymandered for Democrats, but independents are the fastest growing part of the electorate here and nationally. So it's roughly about 40% Democrats, 35% independents, and 25% Republicans. So I thought an independent would have a very good shot of winning a general election. I thought by running in a general election in November instead of a primary in August, it would give more time for a number of things to play out, including some scandals that were beginning to hit Wasserman Schultz herself. One of the scandals dealt with one of her IT employees, a fellow named Imran Awan, a Pakistani national. He and his brothers, the Awan brothers, were pulling in hundreds of thousands of dollars a year as IT support for Wasserman Schultz and for a whole bunch of other Democrats, but she was the one who really brought them in. Now, when that scandal started to go public, what the House Inspector General had already concluded was that Awan had violated all kinds of cybersecurity protocols. He was actually accessing the personal email accounts of something like 44 Democrats in the House of Representatives, as well as some Republicans, members who were on the House Intelligence Committee and some other key committees. And he was at times accessing this information for weeks at a time from Pakistan. So this was probably the greatest cybersecurity scandal and breach in the history of the United States Congress. And it was beginning to come out. There was an infamous scene where Wasserman Schultz was questioning the chief of the Capitol Hill police during a legislative hearing, and she threatened him. It was all caught on video. And I was certainly hoping that by running as an independent, the Republican candidate and the Republican Party would have every interest in trying to exploit these scandals against Wasserman Schultz, blow him up in her face, spend a lot of money attacking her, and that would help an independent campaign. I also thought that there were a lot of Republicans who were potential voters who would come my way. So that was a lot of my thinking in running as an independent. And I really don't regret the strategy. What went wrong was it was hard to foresee that the Republicans in the House of Representatives and in Florida would all pretty much cave in and not bring any kind of charges. Law enforcement agencies were at that point in the hands of Republicans, whether it's the Justice Department or the Florida Attorney General's Office, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. So I have had an election lawyer who was a Republican. It was hard to find a Democrat in 2016 who I could trust as far as somebody with election law experience in the state of Florida. And my lawyer was a great lawyer, and he got back to me and he told me the reason why the Republicans were not looking to make an issue of the destroyed ballots or pretty much any other scandal affecting Wasserman Schultz was that they have the same friends as Wasserman Schultz, the same corporate backers. So that says an awful lot about this duopoly, about what's wrong with this two-party system right now. The same big corporate interests that fund the Democrats fund the Republicans as well. And those corporate interests would rather keep the status quo. They'd rather keep a corrupt incumbent like Wasserman Schultz in office who's going to do their bidding than let somebody who's very independent-minded like me come into office.
Tim, what were your poll numbers leading into the election?
Well, I should say that I wasn't able to raise the same kind of money the second time around. Part of it, I think, was that it was an off-year election. Another big part of it was that we were being throttled and shadow banned on social media. We were pretty much being blacked out on mainstream media, especially after we won our ballot destruction case. Up until then, at least, I was regularly appearing on Fox, although MSNBC and CNN had already blacklisted me. But after we won our ballot destruction case, at a time when you would have thought Fox would have been very excited to play this up, instead, suddenly I didn't even get invitations to appear on mainstream media. And, you know, that's very important for a grassroots campaign. In 2016, I was on MSNBC and CNN and Fox quite a lot. And every time I'd go on one of those programs and be interviewed, the campaign would go more viral. We'd raise a lot more money in small donations. So without a lot of funds this time, I wasn't going to spend it on polls. Now, Wasserman Schultz raised a lot of money. She outraised me the first time around, probably 2-1. This time around, it was more like closer to 20-1. So she had all kinds of resources. I'm sure she did a lot of polling, and yet she never published a single poll, which should say something. Now, just a few weeks before the election, a Republican news outlet published a report on a Republican poll that, according to this news report, had Wasserman Schultz and me in a dead heat at 34% each, with a Republican candidate back at 13%, and about 15 to 20% undecided. When that report came out, it was like the dam had broken. Suddenly, Republicans all across the district realized if they wanted Wasserman Schultz out, I was the one they should get behind rather than this perennial loser on the Republican side. And a lot of independents started breaking my way. It seemed like all the momentum was coming our way in the final 2 weeks. So I had no idea if we were winning or not. I mean, we were at all the early voting sites. We had volunteers at all the early voting sites and the election day sites. And it certainly seemed like all the energy was coming our way. The polls closed on election evening. And within an hour, Wasserman Schultz was declared the winner. And it was reported that I got only 5% of the vote. It never seemed credible to me whatsoever. On election evening, one of our volunteers at one of the voting stations saw something very strange happening, which was a line of cars pulling up outside of the voting site, offloading bags filled with ballots. They were in these big blue satchels, which are what the Board of Elections, the Supervisor of Elections, uses to transport the ballots. And they were loading the ballots onto a rented truck. So there was no chain of custody of these ballots, which was damning in its own right. It ends up the electronic voting machines, all of the scanning machines. So after you vote on a paper ballot, they put it through a scanner, which tabulates the vote. All of those electronic voting machines have wireless cellular modems on them. So they're pretty much designed to be hackable. I would imagine there must be at least a dozen sophisticated intelligence agencies and big corporations that could easily hack in. And this is what a lot of the experts believe happened. Other, I should say, statistical evidence and election data, which is very suspicious, is that from the very beginning, there were about 98,000 votes where the supervisor had not reported for many weeks where the votes were cast, how they were cast, when they were cast. It didn't say whether the votes were cast by mail in the early voting, I should say by mail in sort of the absentee voting, or whether they were cast in early voting, a two-week period, or whether they were cast on election day or by provisional ballots. A lot of the computer experts who study elections say that that's a telltale sign that the votes could have simply been transferred from one candidate to another through computer manipulation, through software manipulation. And then the final very suspicious fact was that I didn't just get capped at 5% of the vote overall, I get 5% of the vote in every demographic group. And
pardon me for laughing, but that's like impossible.
It really is. One of the experts who analyzed this, Dr. David Bader, the chair of Georgia Tech's School of Computational Science, and this man is well qualified. He's got security clearances from half a dozen top level government departments and agencies. He said getting 5% of the vote, the same percent for every demographic group, is as likely as winning the lottery every day for a year.
That sounds about right to me. And Tim, we're going to take a quick break and talk more about 2018 and also your views of what lies ahead when we come back. Welcome back. My guest is Tim Canova, former and perhaps future candidate for Congress in Florida's 23rd District, and a strong advocate for election integrity. Now, Tim, you touched upon the absence of any type of indication of where, when, and how votes were cast, and that touched about 98,000 vote in this last election.
Yes, the 98,000 votes from nowhere, as we're calling them.
Now, back in 2016, that struck a memory for me. There was an affidavit filed by a temporary poll worker named Chelsea Marie Smith that claimed that she witnessed four supervisors of elections in Broward County sitting at the same table actively filling out election ballots. And each of the workers had a stack of blank ballots to the right of them and a stack of completed ballots to their left. She was ultimately fired after her whistleblowing event. And I'm just wondering what the parallels might be, since you also have an overlap that just broke recently in North Carolina. Mark Harris won that race as a Republican, and yet there was a political operative who was orchestrating an absentee ballot scheme to try and sway the 9th District in favor of Mark Harris. And what they've done is they've now called for a new election. Do you think there's any chance Debbie Wasserman Schultz will step up to the table and call for a new election in the 23rd?
No, there's no chance of that. We did put together an election challenge that we filed in Florida Circuit Court and in the U.S. House of Representatives. The House has not responded whatsoever to our election challenge, never heard back from the clerk of the House or from the House Administration Committee. And the House seated Wasserman Schultz in early January. And then, I believe just a few days later, the Circuit Court dismissed our lawsuit. We thought about appealing that dismissal, but we pretty much concluded that the best course of action would be to try to get the House Administration Committee to take this up. The Constitution makes the House the final judge of the elections of its members. So it's really going to be determined there. At least that's been our thinking. And at this point, I think it's too late to appeal anyway. You know, it's been a real pattern in Broward County. As we've said, you have a supervisor's office that destroyed all the paper ballots when they were subject to discovery in a lawsuit. That was in 2016. You mentioned the affidavit by Chelsea Marie Smith suggesting that this supervisor's office here has no trouble either inventing new ballots or destroying real ballots. And then, of course, that seems to be the case in 2018 when the race for Florida governor and the U.S. senator from Florida all got deadlocked in Broward County. And Brenda Snipes, then the supervisor of elections, kept finding thousands of new ballots each day. So any supervisor that's willing to destroy ballots, I imagine, is capable of printing out fake ballots. And I'll also say that in my discussions with election integrity folks, I hear that this is common throughout the country, where in something like almost two dozen states, candidates and activists have asked to inspect ballots only to see them destroyed without any repercussions.
Now, you mentioned you had filed an election challenge, I'm assuming under Article 1, Section 5, with the House.
Yeah.
And you now have started a citizen's petition. Is that correct?
Well, I didn't start it. It was a group called Candidates with a Contract, which had endorsed me. They started the petition drive, and I'm certainly in favor of this petition drive. Anything that will put pressure on the House Administration Committee and their members, both Democrats and Republicans, to do their job and consider a challenge and to listen to the experts, bring in the witnesses. So anyone who wants to sign that petition can go to my website at timcanova.com and click on the news page. You can find the petition there, and we put it up on social media as well.
Well, in my best Trey Gowdy impression, I'm going to ask you a series of yes-no questions. And
okay.
I think this may be the basis behind that petition. Broward County election officials failed to maintain proper chain of custody of the paper ballots cast in the 2018 election. Yes or no?
Correct.
The Florida election officials failed to maintain any proper chain of custody of the electronic voting machine.
Correct.
Broward County election officials failed to maintain digitally scanned images of the ballots as directed by the Florida Secretary of State.
Correct.
The electronic scanning machines all had wireless digital scanned images, and you addressed this before, and so they were vulnerable to outside hackers.
Correct.
And no one's permitted to inspect the software that was actually used in the election, since the source code is considered proprietary.
Correct.
I would encourage everybody to sign that petition.
Thank you, TJ. I appreciate that.
Well, the improprieties are on the surface. I mean, you don't have to be an election expert. There's so many other issues down there. We touched upon gerrymandering. There are voter registration issues that I know you're aware of in the background. The difference between paper and digital ballots. The chain of custody issue, though, is readily secured. And the fact that Brenda Snipes ultimately resigned, I think she did herself a favor because I think she would have been removed. But what's transpired down in the 23rd district should be a wake-up call for everybody.
That's right. TJ, it was a wake-up call for me. In the first campaign, a big part of my campaign was campaign finance reform. And, you know, I really think that big corporate money has distorted our politics. But I'll tell you, I think grassroots campaigns can defeat even well-funded incumbents because I think most of the people really want change and they don't trust incumbents anymore. But more important than campaign finance reform is this election integrity. As long as we've got elections that are run by computers that are inherently vulnerable, either inside manipulation of the software by the vendors themselves or outside hacking to change the software, we don't have a democracy. And there's no reason to have faith or confidence in the election outcome. Just about every European democracy, Canada, many countries have banned the electronic voting machines because they know how easy they are to manipulate the results. And for some reason, we haven't done it. It's ironic and a bit of hypocrisy when all we're hearing about all the time is the Russians are coming. The Russians can hack into our election system. I imagine if the Russians can, the Chinese can. Certainly, there are plenty of American intelligence agencies and big corporations that could hack into our election system. And yet, we don't ban the electronic voting machine. Every major democracy has moved to a system of hand-counted paper ballots where they're counted by hand in public. And that's what we need in this country. There's no way to have real faith and confidence in election results as long as we have this black box voting where you fill out your ballot, it goes into a machine, and somehow we're supposed to trust that the machine is properly calibrated and it's going to count our ballot the way we intend our vote to be cast.
Well, Tim, in the limited amount of time we have left, where can our listeners go to learn more about you and your efforts to reform our election system?
Well, we're on Facebook, you know, at main Tim Canova campaign site and Twitter. And we have a website at timcanova.com. If folks click on the news page, they can sign the petition and read about everything that's been happening in the last two campaigns.
Well, thank you. I hope everyone will follow you and potentially support your effort to assure election integrity in Broward County. And that, perhaps, will foster a broader impact across the country. So keep fighting the good fight, Tim, and thank you again for joining me on Deconstructed.
Thank you, TJ. It's a pleasure to be with you.